Today is February 15th, 2017, and this is episode number 398 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Mr. Presumptuous. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show,
so were you trying to get through on a single breath like I do?
No, we're running a little short on time.
We are running short on time. Yeah. All right. Well, then I know how to fix that.
Yeah.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
That's cheating.
Oh.
I have to tell you that like almost every week.
Oh, well.
We have to do the show before we end the show.
Sometimes I have a really hard time with this linear progression of time.
Fair enough. It's all that Doctor Who you freaking watch.
Yeah, it's totally that.
I'm kidding. I love Doctor Who.
I did get a good laugh out of you.
Yeah, you did. You did not as good as the laugh I got out of Chuck. Chuck's putting up a show this week with me. He caught me flat-footed.
So that would be Chuck Joyner from Mac Voices.
Mac Voices. He made up a title for me in honor of the fact that I make up a new title every week for this show.
Yes.
He made up a title for me, and he caught me flat-footed. I was not expecting what he said.
Okay. Well, we'll have to have a link to that in the show notes so people can find that easily. And hopefully by the time we're done recording and publishing, that'll be live so that I can go hear your new title.
Yes. Yes. He found one weird trick to make me laugh.
Yeah. Click here to learn the one weird trick to make Brian laugh. And you click and it says, do something funny.
Right. So didn't we say something about being short on time? So
we did. Is this where I click the outro bumper?
Did that, but we also, because we're going to talk about Blue Apron, because they're sponsoring us this week.
They keep coming back for more. Bless their hearts.
Bless their hearts. Yeah, they've been very good to us.
They really have.
Helping take care of us so that we can take care of you.
Oh, man. You did announcer voice. That was really great.
Thank you. Thank you. Right. So topics, believe it or not, we actually have a topic.
That's the enthusiasm I'm looking for.
Well, I realized that the notes that I made for us for our topics, I can't repeat some of them.
I know, but I just, oh, man, I wish that we could just share these notes.
Right. But we can't because we do try to keep things family friendly here. So here's an interesting thing.
Okay. Tell me an interesting thing, Brian.
The Russian hacker group. And when I say the Russian hacker group, what I mean is a hacker group associated with the Russian government.
Okay.
In populated with by Russian speakers who live in or near Russia and regularly do the bidding of the Russian government.
Yes. Hence Russian hackers.
Yes, exactly. This is a group known as APT28. Now that is not apartment 28, which you might think that was what it was, right?
Right. Which is not near where Sherlock Holmes lives.
That is correct.
21B Baker Street.
Right. But it stands for, and anyway, it stands for something else. And,
but it doesn't translate because English versus Russian.
Yeah, no.
It's a word that we can't say on TV.
The problem here is that we don't do homework for the show.
See, and the problem you're having is that you didn't realize I was saying clever things to stall while you did homework.
Oh, right.
You know, that's, and anyhow, it's okay. No one noticed. It's okay.
Yeah, I think I have the information though. This is a designation given by our intelligence.
So it's not even their own name. It's some name we slapped on them.
Correct. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of names. Like I think the group goes by the name of Sophocy. They put out, this is ridiculous.
Sophocy sounds a lot better than APT-28 or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, Sednet APT, but again, the APT is the same anachronism. It's like something about the threat. The T is threat. This is turning into a fantastic episode.
It is. People are riveted right now.
Right now.
So how this group, what the name stands for in government parlance isn't as critical as why we're talking about them, right?
Yep. It is when you're pedantic.
All right. Well, let's do this little game, Brian. It's called Let's Pretend. And let's pretend like Brian already found the answer.
Okay, fine. This group.
Yeah, hey, this group.
Targeting Mac users now. And they're targeting Mac users with a variant of malware that has previously been used to target Windows and Linux devices. PCs, computers, as opposed to necessarily mobile phones. And that software was named XAgent. And Bitdefender, Bitdefender, found...
Mm-hmm. That would be smaller than Bitdefender, because... 8 bits in a byte. Anyhow, carry on.
Bitdefender found found an example of a version of this that, you know, it's using a lot of the same code. It's using a lot of the same structure and is doing things in the very same way, targeting Macs. And this software is it's malware that has to be loaded via Trojan.
Okay.
Right. So they haven't figured out how to, at least that we know of, or at least this particular example isn't about remotely hacking your Mac.
Right. Okay. So it's still social engineering to trick you to install it, hence Trojan.
Correct. Or slipping it into pirated software installers.
Sure. I'll still call that a Trojan.
As a matter of fact, very specifically, what Bitdefender found was that it's being distributed exclusively so far through the Complex, that's KOMPLEX installer, which is a malware downloader that was already targeting the Mac. And so, you know, someone clicks to go get something that's free and because they want to steal, and they're getting this downloader and giving that downloader permission. They're giving the downloader permission by typing in their password to install something. And then it may or may not be installing what it's supposed to be installing, but then it's also installing a bunch of stuff, a bunch of malware.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
It's just fantastic. So this particular software allows the bad guys to take over your Mac, see your files. It apparently looks for iPhone backups.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that they can turn around and get that information too, which would be very, very useful if you were targeting someone specific and if you had some way of targeting someone specific.
Sure.
Right.
So yeah, and if you're not doing encrypted backups.
If you're not doing encrypted backups, too. For instance, you wanted to go after a government employee, mm-hmm, or a business employee of some sort, an executive or something like that. So this would be a great way to do it if you could get the software on their system. Because it has to go through malware, it's a lot harder to target someone specific. Reality is that this is probably going to be a lot more useful, and just from the standpoint of of getting credit card information and stuff like that, which is not really what APT 28 does.
Right. Nonetheless, actually, Brian, it's really easy to get Mac users to install malware. All you have to do is get a dialog that pops up and says your version of Flash is out of date. Click here to update.
Yeah, that's true.
And since we have this long history of being able to trust all the software that runs on our Macs, it's very easy for people to trust any dialog that pops up and says you need to install this.
Right.
So anyhow,
that's true. And smart people do get, it's not, I mean, not just the technically unsavvy or someone who doesn't know what they're doing. I mean, smart people can be tricked by this stuff for sure. People who know what they're doing can be tricked by this stuff. Mm-hmm. And some of them are more, you know, ham-fisted than others. By the way, my favorite name for this group, uh-huh, is Fancy Bear.
Fancy Bear?
Fancy Bear.
I kind of like that. I like that a lot.
Pondstorm, Sophocy Group, Sednet, and Strontium. Oh, Strontium. Oh, that's brutal. Oh, my gosh. That's the radioactive poison that was used to that Putin used to kill the journalist.
Yeah.
Who was very critical, who's very critical in reporting on Russia.
Yeah.
On Putin.
I think I want to stick with Fancy Bear.
Fancy Bear, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, these are all names for this group. I actually want APT-28 to stand for Apartment 28 because
like Apartment 28. That's the apartment they're hiding in.
Yeah, exactly. Or that's where they got their start. Advanced Persistent Threat. Found it! Yay! Oh my gosh! Ace OCD solved! Yay!
Well, so much for the game I was playing where we pretended like you'd already found it.
Advanced Persistent Threat. There are many groups that have an APT designation by our intelligence officers, by our intelligence community. So anyway, you may possibly have heard of this group already because this is the group that hacked the Democratic National Committee and released all the emails in an effort to influence our election.
Oh, great. So there goes the hope that they're altruistic.
There was no hope of that.
No, I know.
So I mean, and my point there is that these folks are the real deal, right? These aren't script kiddies, right? These folks are the real deal, and they're specifically targeting Max. And with tensions rising between the U.S. and China, and parts of the U.S. government and Russia.
Uh-huh. I see what you did there.
Things could get real for us as Mac users. From this standpoint, by and large, the whole security through obscurity concept that many Apple detractors have long wanted to credit, well, and there's some truth to it too, but have long wanted to credit the Mac's relative immunity to malware.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They wanted to dismiss that as security through obscurity. There just aren't enough Mac users for the bad guys to care about, and there's certainly some merit to that. But I think that what we've seen as Apple's Mac sales have risen to large numbers, despite Apple's relative small share of the computer space, there are enough Mac users out there for criminal organizations to want to target us. And we see phishing schemes. We see, you know, phishing schemes that are designed to look like Apple communications. We see that all the time. We see stuff through Flash and through things masquerading as Flash. We, you know, those are definitely also aimed at Mac users. But what I think, what I fear that we're going to see now with with this escalation and tensions between, again, the U.S. and China and parts of the U.S. government and Russia, is those governments being particularly interested in being able to compromise Mac, simply because A, Apple is a huge company, and B, it is sort of, you know, kind of has become a little bit of the face of American capitalism. Kind of. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are people out there that could argue with me against that. But then also because, you know, they're Mac users and Apple customers in general tend to dwell towards the higher end of the economic, socioeconomic strata.
And which is kind of funny because then there's us.
Yes, then there's us. So with government sponsored hackers paying more attention to the Mac, that stuff will eventually filter down to, or sometimes laterally, to the criminal organizations. Mm-hmm. Right? Because a lot of times the criminal hacking groups either have their fingers in the government sponsored areas, or sometimes they're the same people who are freelancing. Right? I mean, it's the, you know, there's a lot of interplay between these groups. And again, to make this point, with if we are seeing the beginnings of more state sponsored hacking groups paying more attention to compromising Macs, that stuff will also filter out. That's a threat to us as Mac users, but it will also filter out to the criminal groups.
Yeah.
And once it filters out to the criminal groups, it eventually filters down to the script kiddies.
Right. So so what we have right now looks like a government orchestrated attack on Macs that once they've got this done, it's just going to spread out to everyone in the hacker community.
Yeah. And keep in mind, while there is some merit to the idea that the criminal hackers in particular weren't paying as much attention to the Mac because there are fewer of us, at the same time, OS X, or Mac OS as it's called now, mm-hmm. is also more secure than Windows. It's not perfect mm-hmm. by any stretch of the imagination. Apple patches zero-day exploits as fast as it can, and we see them with every security release. We see them being patched with every security release. There are plenty of vulnerabilities in macOS that haven't been discovered yet, and plenty of zero-day exploits that are out there that have been discovered by the bad guys that Apple doesn't know about yet. And then there's even plenty of exploits that are in the process of being fixed.
Right.
So I'm not trying to say that the Mac is perfect, but by and large, this platform has been built with more security in mind, and there is inherently more security in a whole widget model.
So are you saying in a manner of speaking that there's a certain level of prestige that goes along with being a hacker organization that is routinely breaking into Macs?
Well, that would be the case, and no one's doing that yet. They're not routinely breaking into Macs, and it's not like Mac malware has never existed, because there has been other malware that targets Mac users, for sure. That targets Macs, but in this particular case, we've got a very sophisticated government group, government sponsored, government paid for group doing it, and that means it's probably going to get better. But at the same time, I wasn't so much talking about the prestige aspect. What I was actually talking about is, it's not like Macs are not likely to become like Windows were 10 years ago or 15 years ago or 20 years ago.
Okay.
Right. Nothing like that. I'm not saying that we're about to be overrun by malware, by any stretch of the imagination. But I'm saying that things could get worse for us.
All right. So to that end, that tells me that Mac users need to start being more vigilant about their own computer security.
And the Macs of those people that they care for, right? A lot of people listening to this show are the people that their friends and family go to for help with their Macs.
All right. So then looks like it's time for people to start making sure that they've locked down their Macs as effectively as they can.
And that they learn about phishing attacks.
Mm-hmm.
That they learn about, you know, that they teach their friends and family that they're taken care of in terms of technology, that they teach them about phishing attacks, that they teach them about these so-called flash installers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they teach them about ransomware.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Turn on the right. Firewall on your Mac.
Yeah, you know, these... There are a lot of aspects about security that we really haven't had to pay attention to because there hasn't been a lot of stuff that's out there. But I think that things could get worse for us as Mac users. And again, just to make this, I just want to drive this point home. A lot of people listening to this are the people that take care of their loved ones when it comes to technology.
Yep. So we now have an added responsibility for all the other Mac users in our life.
In our lives, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So are you running your firewall on your Mac?
I don't know. Let's see.
I mean, you're behind a firewall right now.
Yes.
And and I leave my firewall running on my MacBook Pro all the time because it leaves my office a lot. Are you running virus protection software, malware protection software?
No, I'm not.
I am.
And I haven't in a very, very, very... Well, oh, man, my firewall's off. That's really cool.
No, you're okay because you're behind a firewall right now. Because you're on a private network.
But, right, but there is something to be said about having a firewall turned on individual Macs.
Yeah. All right, well, since you're not running any sort of virus or malware protection software right now, and just so you know, I'm not judging, but it became a perfect opportunity to toss out what I think is the best Mac choice right now. Which is
Avira. Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yeah,
so, Avira. I'm sorry, what is that again?
Avira. It's free.
How do you spell that?
I think it's A-V-I-R-A.
I'm always leery of free antivirus software.
Okay, so it's free, but it's the free tool from a company that sells these sorts of tools.
Ah.
And, it's A-V-I-R-A. And... I switched to that from Clamex AV, which is also free. Well, no, actually, I guess it's not free anymore, is it? But anyhow, I switched from Clamex AV because Clamex AV is limited to the rigid framework of being able to identify threats based on the thumbprint database that it has. And thumbprint meaning what it is that identifies each individual threat. And Avira is more nimble, and what it does is it looks not only for the things in its database, but it also looks for malware-like activity. So it can proactively prevent some threats that it doesn't even know about simply because of the sort of things that that typically happen when those are installed.
All right, so I'm looking at the Avira site right now.
Mm-hmm.
The free version, quote unquote, guarantees your privacy,
mm-hmm.
protects you from malware,
mm-hmm.
offers community support, but that has a slightly different checkbox. I'm not really sure what that is. The paid version is $44.99 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to those three things I just mentioned, they offer phone and email support, includes a multi-platform license,
mm-hmm.
and device control, gives you control over which USB devices can connect. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So anyway, there you have it. We'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with it. I've been using that for many months now. And the only reason I know that it's actually there and doing its thing is because periodically I'll get a little dialogue that pops up on my Mac that says a malware threat was blocked. And typically it relates to like an email that came in.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Regular?
Just every now and then I'll get a spam email that has some sort of malware thing in it.
All right, I'm going to download it now and try it out just because you recommend it.
Awesome.
That's how I roll, dude. That's how I roll.
You're pretty wild like that.
I am wild. Wild is the what? Yeah, that's totally wild. Do you know what else is wild?
Oh, tell me, Brian, what's wild?
Blue Apron.
Dude,
they're really sponsoring us. Yes, they're giving us money. They're helping to pay the bills here at Timo.
I love when they help.
Yeah, absolutely. And what Blue Apron does is they deliver food to your door.
Yes, and it's really good food. And it's not passive, you know, like, here's a meal, eat it. It's like, here's this really good food. Make it into an awesome meal. We'll show you how.
Yeah, we're going to show you how. We're going to give you the recipe, and we're going to show you how to do it. And the food is fresh, and it's quality. You know what I made? Can I tell you what I made last night?
I really want to know what you made. Tell me what you made, what you really, really made.
I made it was chicken.
Uh-huh.
And it was on a hash of potatoes and apples and onions and kale.
Holy crap.
With mustard.
That sounds magical.
It was freaking good, man. It was really, really good. And believe it or not, I know I live in California, but it was actually the first time I've cooked with kale.
Are you serious? I've cooked with kale before. Well, I do live in Boulder. So yeah, it makes sense.
And it had almonds on top, and it was so good. It was really good.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, it had to be good because you were actually speechless.
Yeah, I was actually speechless because here's the deal. I was actually thinking of another meal too. I made the meal before that I made was cumin crusted pork.
Uh-huh.
With apple, walnut, and farro salad. I've never cooked with farro either. And what I loved about this particular meal was how the instructions were so tightly choreographed. And it taught me about cooking things in the right order. I mean, it's not that I was unaware of this, but it gave me this very, very, very practical experience with cooking things in the right order so that the thing that took 5 minutes was cooking while the thing that took 12 minutes was cooking while the thing that took 22 minutes.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is so hard to balance that out. And I do love that they teach you how to make that happen.
Yeah, and it's not even that they're teaching. I mean, because the instructions are so easy and so laid out step by step that I just do it, and then I realize, oh, I see what they did there.
Yeah, see, wow, that's really clever. They taught you in a very clever way.
Yeah, yeah, and it was this cumin crusted. It had a fig sauce. It was a sauce. I've never cooked with figs before either. It was the sauce was figs and red wine vinegar. It's, I don't know, something in the blood of an orange, the juice of a blood orange. The blood of a juice.
The blood of a juice orange from the planet Trafalgar.
Exactly. It was the juice of a blood orange with figs and red wine vinegar. And that sauce was so good. The whole thing, it was just so delicious. It was so delicious. And it was so fun to cook. And I was cooking with things that I'd never cooked before and was able to do so. And I love that. I love all the things I've learned from Blue Apron. I love the food that they've sent me. I love the recipes that they've sent me.
I think that's so
awesome. It's great. It's just great stuff. And here's the deal. They're sponsoring us. Mm-hmm. As part of that sponsorship, you can get three of your first meals for free. Three meals in your first order will be free.
All right. That's pretty cool. That's very cool.
And they're going to ship to you for free.
That's very cool as well.
So it is the whole thing is cool.
So if they're offering that deal, that means that our listeners need to go somewhere to find it. Do you know where that is?
They do. I do, as a matter of fact. It's blueapron.com/ACM. You can check out this week's menu and get three meals off your first order for free, with free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/ACM. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/ACM.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. Thank you,
Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook. Yeah. Thank you very much for your sponsorship. We want you to go show them some of the same love that they're showing us, and write me and tell me about it.
Yeah, we want to know what you're eating.
Yeah, we want to. Yeah, and what you think of that experience too. By the way, we didn't talk about this in the show prep. We had a comment on last week's show.
Oh, tell me about a comment.
Yeah, it was a guy who took us to task.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm all right being taken to task. I'm all right when you're taken to task.
Except for the fact that he was wrong about some things.
All right.
But, yeah.
Was he right about anything?
Yeah, he did. He was right about something. I want to find it. Where is that piece? What is this? Is this 398 or 399?
This is 398 today.
It's 398 today. So maybe it was the previous show. So where the heck is that comment? It came in this week. Maybe it was on like 3 weeks ago. Oh, it's the net neutrality piece. Yes. Yeah. All right. Oh, so anyway, okay. We just got a comment. Yeah. This was from JK Dawson. This was a comment that he made on the show notes.
Well, JK, thanks for listening.
Yes. The one thing that he said that is absolutely correct. He said, fascism is not a terribly well-defined term, but I would think someone who describes themselves as pedantic, that deregulation, even ones we don't like, is not fascism. He's absolutely correct. I called Ajit, what's his last name? Pai? Ajit Pai. I called him a fascist. Actually, I called him a fascist piece of crap.
Yes. As long as you're being pedantic, I believe that's exactly what you called him.
That's exactly what I said. I also called him a horrible human being. I regret calling him a horrible human being. Calling him a fascist piece of crap is not accurate in that he's not a fascist. He may be a fascist, but his deregulation policies are not particularly fascist. I will accept J.K. Dawson's admonishment on that for sure.
All right. That seems fair.
All right. So the first thing he said was all of your examples of the problems net neutrality solves are hypothetical. And none of these horrors seemed to be happening before the net neutrality rule was put in place. Okay. Here's the problem with that. I'm trying very, very hard to maintain my cool. Before the net neutrality rule was put in place by the FCC, net neutrality was the law of the land. These things weren't a problem because everybody was following the principles of net neutrality. The rules were put into place because companies were starting to break those rules. That drives me bananas.
All right, so I'm going to toss in a little thing in there.
Yes.
Before the net neutrality regulations were put in place by the FCC and Tom Wheeler. We were also dealing with this fight that was going on between the large service providers, ISPs, and Netflix, where their content was being intentionally degraded or blocked.
Yes.
Until Netflix agreed to pay extra money.
So two aspects here. One was that these things weren't a problem before the net neutrality rules were put in place by the FCC, because the principles of net neutrality were being followed until they weren't, which then made it a problem before that caused the FCC to impose the net neutrality rules. The net neutrality rules imposed by the FCC were codifying the unofficial law of the land that was already in place and was the reason and direct mechanism by which the internet became what it is today. There's a reason why we're fighting for net neutrality. It works, and it has worked, and it is important for data to remain unencumbered by corporate agendas.
I do agree with you. The notion that data that I have already paid for is going to travel over a service that I have already paid for and then get blocked because someone along the way wants someone else to pay even more money. Want me to pay more money for whatever
they
paid for.
They want monies to be diverted to something that they're doing. One of the two.
Right. And
yes,
you know, and right now we're talking about video content because we have Netflix as an example. But it doesn't have to be just video content. It could be anything. It could be search results that your ISP doesn't want you to see because they would rather show you something that has a high likelihood of generating them revenue.
Correct. Or political speech.
Sure.
Or, you know, whistleblower information, or, you know, you could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
You can go on and on.
I really feel that net neutrality regulations need to be in place, even though the majority of companies involved seem to be happy to just follow the rule of the land. But if we don't have something official, when a company decides they want to play outside the rules, we have something in place to bring them back in line. I know that the whole thing about government regulation and more control is a hot button for a lot of people, but man, there are some places where it's really important. You know, like
protecting for instance,
the environment, protecting the food we eat, protecting the data that we're sending through the internet.
Yes, and many more. So he made another point that I think is actually quite good. So actually, I think I agree with several of his points. I'm still referring to J.K. Dawson.
Okay.
By the way, whether or not I agree with you, J.K. Dawson, thank you very, very much for commenting. That's much appreciated. But so we've already agreed that I incorrectly use fascism when I'm talking about Ajit, and that was inappropriate and unfair of me, both, and inaccurate. But he also said, J.K. Dawson, at least one downside to the net neutrality rules is that many people believe the zero rating T-Mobile does for video and music violates net neutrality. This has been a boon to those of us with kids who do a ton of video streaming. The argument against the zero rating seems to be some of the philosophical camel's nose under the tent argument. So what he's talking about is that some people have accused T-Mobile of violating net neutrality by not charging for some data.
Okay.
There is, I think, a fantastic argument can be had about that. And I wonder, I'm torn on this issue. Because I don't think it's not the same kind of infringement on net neutrality as Comcast throttling Netflix. This idea that T-Mobile doesn't charge end users for some data. I don't, because to me, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong on that. What's framing my thoughts on this particular topic is the idea that Netflix is giving us something extra. Comcast was trying to take away stuff from us. Verizon is trying to take away stuff from us.
When you said Netflix, you really meant T-Mobile, didn't you?
Thank you. Yes, I did. I meant T-Mobile.
I had a feeling.
Yeah.
I can tell you're really stressed because you pulled out your really awesome steampunk lighter and you're flicking the lid.
Yeah, sorry. I'll put that up. T-Mobile has given us something extra by not charging us for some kinds of data. But the reality is that does also, you know, it does kind of.
This is a really fine line they're walking now that we're talking about it, because it's not like they're doing anything that prohibits the free flow of data, but they are doing something that promotes some data over other data. But they're not harming anyone. Or restricting.
Well, you could be arguing. One could argue that they're harming everybody else by not making that stuff free. You could make that argument. Whether or not that argument has any validity is another issue. But a reasonable person could make that argument. And to J.K. Dawson's point, net neutrality rules could have been used to stop that practice. Now, Ajit Pai has already announced the FCC has already announced that they're not going to pursue any actions against T-Mobile for this. So this is an academic discussion because the politics have already been decided.
Sure.
But J.K. Dawson has, you know, like I said, he's got a point that this is a kind of argument against neutrality. I've been thinking about this since he made this comment. I've been thinking about this point. Does what T-Mobile did is that the kind of violation that I would theoretically should want to be stopped because it infringes upon net neutrality? I don't think it does, but I am still thinking about it.
Yeah, see, that's a hard one, and I hadn't really thought about it in that way until he brought it up. I'm assuming she brought it up.
We can probably, I'm not going to guess,
but until our dear listener brought it up, I don't know. I'm now torn.
I am torn. And the last thing he said is that you and I may disagree with Ajit Pai, but he is generally regarded as a smart, thoughtful person, even by many who violently disagree with him. But a fair point. I think that my passion over the subject allowed me to say things about Mr. Pai that I should not have said, should not have even thought. And I accept your admonishment on those particular fronts.
You're a very good man, Brian.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. If I was a really good man, wouldn't I have not have called him a fascist, called Ajit a fascist piece of crap to begin with?
Well, you're not a perfect man. But you're good.
Thank you. I am. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, thanks for writing in and setting us straight where appropriate and sharing your opinions. And yeah, that's great. I love it.
Yeah, I do.
Are you trying to multitask?
I'm poorly.
Yeah.
As per usual.
It's funny. I can tell right when you start multitasking.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. All right, let's move on to the next topic.
All right.
Apple Music and Video. We had the Planet of the Apps thing, mm-hmm. the trailer, mm-hmm. and it set the echo chamber on fire. Right, everybody just complained about that thing. So what we're talking about is Apple has commissioned a show, has bought a show called Planet of the Apps. Mm-hmm. And why don't you describe the trailer for us, please?
All right. So Planet of the Apps, and this is what you pick up from the trailer. It's a reality TV show where you have developers, iOS developers, that have to pitch their app idea to a group of celebrities who then become their advocates if their app is chosen to move forward. And so the show follows the process of people pitching and then working on their app as they develop it and get ready to present to a VC company, venture capital company, for a $10 million development prize and to be featured on
the $10 million development?
Uh-huh.
$10 million development prize?
Yep.
It's a lot of freaking money, man.
That's a lot of freaking money.
So it's a startup competition, like there are tons of startup competitions already. For instance, TechCrunch is what do they call their thing?
I don't know because I am so not interested in that kind of programming.
And what's the thing that you CES? You didn't go to this year, but you went to the year before.
Oh yeah,
where you're watching all the pitches.
Whereas, the thing that I just drew a blank on the name. Yeah, but yes.
Yeah, excellent. Top men. We are so professional. My point is that this concept was not invented for this show that Apple is doing, but it is bringing that process to television, rightly or wrongly, I might add.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know. The shows like this are really, really popular. And I totally get why Apple is.
Well,
they're really popular.
Shows like this in other areas have been popular. Some of them have
I'm
also
talking
been
about the genre.
Huge flops. Yeah, the genre has had its share of success.
Right.
It's not like every show in this genre has been a huge hit, and no one's done it with app development before.
No, but they've done it with businesses, and they've done it with a lot of different things. So this type of show,
Shark Tank would be the biggest one.
Oh, okay. There you go, Shark Tank.
CNBC show that's kind of a big deal right now.
All right, so these shows as a genre have a proven track record. And so why not start with something like this? And it also has the added bonus of being able to ride on the popularity of the iPhone and the App Store.
And it helps. Yeah, it's a virtuous circle kind of thing.
Yeah. And then it promotes the App Store. So,
okay. Well, here's the deal. This trailer was met with fairly unrelenting scorn in the echo chamber. Is that your experience too? Social media is just... is people just complaining about it.
Yeah,
you didn't
the
like
echo chamber just crapped all over this.
Right. You know, and you know what I say to that?
What do you say to that, Brian?
Blank all y'all. That's what I say. That's what I say. Because here's the deal, man. Here's the deal. Apple, and the same thing with Carpool Karaoke, right? That's being spun off from the Late Late Show. Mm-hmm. With James Corden. Mm-hmm. It's being spun off into a standalone series that's going to be on Apple Music. Planet of the Apps is going to be on Apple Music. Right? We have the show with Dr. Dre, some kind of scripted show that Dr. Dre has been producing about his life.
In a fictionalized way.
Yeah, fictionalized, dramatized kind of vital signs. Oh, that was very, very nice.
Thank you.
Actually, right. You were a top man for there for a moment.
For a moment.
And people are just like the echo chamber, the tech world, has not been kind to these shows. And to which I say, again, blank all y'all. This, because here's the deal. It doesn't have to be for you. As a matter of fact, to a large extent, it isn't for you. It's not for us in the echo chamber, right? The echo chamber is not going to make Apple Music. Apple Music is for a much broader world.
Yeah, the echo chamber buys in early, world. And then you have to broaden your market.
Yes. And it turns out that not everything is about you or me or any one of us. Carpool Karaoke is going to be a huge hit. It's already been this huge hit for James Corden in the Late Late Show. Right. And he's mm-hmm. not hosting each of these episodes that's going to be on Apple TV.
Yeah, they'll have different guest host drivers.
Right. But he is involved. He's an executive producer for this series. He's in at least one episode with Will Smith. That was in the trailer.
Yeah.
That show is going to be a huge hit, and it's going to bring eyeballs and paying subscribers to Apple Music.
I agree.
I don't know if Planet of the Apes is going to be a huge hit, but
I think it has a likelihood of performing very well. And keep in mind, I'm saying that as someone that is not interested in this genre. Right.
You were also unimpressed, but you weren't being a jerk about it.
No, I was unimpressed because this isn't the kind of show that appeals to me. Yet I'm going to watch it and see if it does appeal to me, because I need to understand what Apple's doing, and I need to have an open mind about things like this. And if I still don't like it after seeing it, I'll let people know. And
there are people who will watch this who may be interested in the development process and the VC pitching process, venture capitalist pitching process, right? And there are a lot of people that watch these kinds of shows just because they find, you know, the business aspect, they find the presentations, whatever. They find aspects of this fascinating, whatever. That's not even the point. The point is that the echo chamber is just full of itself. And it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the fact that there's a lot of people in the echo chamber that are really pissed off about these shows is a sign that there's a lot of people that just aren't getting that not everything that Apple is doing is targeted specifically for them.
It's not right. And the bigger Apple gets, the worse that's going to get.
Yeah. You know, I remember years ago going to user group meetings where some attendees would complain because there were presentations about the iPhone.
Yeah.
And they're pissed off because I'm in a Mac user group and all I want to hear about is Mac, and I don't care about any other product Apple makes. Just talk about Mac. And right. But there were other people that were coming to these Mac user groups because there was a broader product line and they wanted to learn about these new things Apple was doing. So, you know, it was valid content to present, just like I think these are valid shows to produce, and they're not for everyone, and that's okay.
Right. And in particular, Apple Music is being aimed at a younger audience, rightly or wrongly. Rightly. It's being aimed at a younger audience. I think
that's appropriate.
And Eddie Q recently said, I think he said it either this week or late last week, he said that the videos were going to be a way that Apple can differentiate itself from competing services like Pandora and Spotify. Mm-hmm. Now, I would point out that Amazon says to that, yeah, duh.
Right. Yeah. See, this tells me that Apple isn't looking at Spotify or Pandora as its long-term competitors in this space. It's looking to Netflix and Amazon.
Right. Netflix and Amazon. And Apple is going to be producing a wide variety of content, and it has to start somewhere. There has to be a first show. We've already gotten that first show, actually. You know, Apple had stuff with Vice. It did the Taylor Swift concert. Mm-hmm. So there's already been some video content that was exclusive to Apple TV. There's going to be more exclusive content for Apple TV. There has to be a first show that's being produced for Apple TV, right? And there's going to be more. And with any luck, there's going to be a lot of stuff. And you know, very few of us like every show on any particular network. Very few of us like everything that Netflix makes. Netflix has some great shows. Very few of us like all of them. Very few of us like everything that Amazon is producing. Amazon's producing a lot of kid stuff. It'd be like the echo chamber complaining about the kid shows, the animated kid shows that Amazon is doing, and talking about how ridiculous. It's like, guess what? It's not for you. There are people who are going to like Planet of the Apps. And there are a lot of people who are going to like Carpool Karaoke.
And don't worry, Apple is going to have a show at some point, maybe very soon, that is for you.
Maybe.
They want to draw on a wide audience. And I think that just as they grow their stable of original content, they will start having shows that appeal to at least some of the people that are totally put off by Carpool Karaoke or Planet of the Apps.
Right.
I'm going to give both a chance.
Yeah. And, well, you don't even have to give it a chance. It's also okay for someone not to like it. Yeah. I'm not saying that people can't like Planet of the Apps.
And I may very well not like Planet of the Apps. We've already established I don't like that genre.
You're not going to like it. Although, you know, that said, every time you say you don't like something that Apple's going to do, you end up liking it. So, you know, whatever. But it's okay for people not to like it. What's ridiculous, in my opinion, is to say that therefore Apple shouldn't do it.
Right.
That's the thing that I'm cranky about. I don't expect everyone to like Carpool Karaoke. There was someone on Facebook. Someone on Facebook commented like with the Carpool Karaoke trailer that we posted, which I think was just a brilliant trailer.
It's a really good trailer. Yes, I agree.
And that person said, you know, is it just me? I don't want to see any of these people sing. I get that. But guess what? There are people who do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want that person to pretend to like these people or to find a liking that he doesn't have. That's not the thing. It's just understand that it's not for you and move on. But don't insist that Apple not do it, because it's just, that doesn't make any sense.
Yep. There you go. And I bet there's a lot of people that don't like Carpool Karaoke, but they watched the one with Tim Cook.
Yeah. Did Tim Cook do Carpool Karaoke? Well, how did I miss that? Are you serious? Tim Cook did Carpool Karaoke?
I'm pretty sure Tim Cook did Carpool Karaoke. Tim Cook
did do Carpool Karaoke. Hold on. Come on.
We're going to check this right now. Oh, Safari crashed. Well, there's some irony for you.
Look at that. He did Carpool Karaoke. How did I miss this?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I wrote something.
What was I doing in
it.
September? Could he sing? There's like, no way he can sing.
It doesn't matter if you can sing when you do karaoke. What matters is that you have fun.
Now see, that's
Michelle Obama was a fracking awesome Carpool Karaoke.
No, she was. She was absolutely fantastic. And by the way, my inner musician is going to just freak out at what you just said. But let's see. You know what? It's okay. People can have fun with Carpool Karaoke. I'm gonna swallow some of my own medicine, and that's just fine. All right, look, we gotta go. But let's go.
All right.
I love you, brother. Thanks for listening to me just froth and rant and be all busy.
You know, sometimes you just got to work it out. And I'm glad that I'm here for you, and that all our listeners are here for you too. We're all in this together. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, or if you have therapy options for Brian, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I can't sing. I can't sing either.
You should try karaoke.